Good evening, everybody. This is Jeff J. Brown in Shenzhen, China, for another installment and an outstanding podcast on China Rising Radio Sinoland. I am deeply honored and privileged to have on the show tonight, for all my fans out there, Mr. Ramin Mazahari. Am I pronouncing that right, Ramin Mazahari?
No, but very few people do. It's Ramin Mazahari.
Oh, Mazahari. Okay, the accent's on the third syllable. All right, gotcha. Well, hey, for everybody out there, Ramin is the chief correspondent in Paris for Press TV. He's lived in France since 2009. He has been a daily newspaper reporter in the U.S. and has reported from Iran, Cuba, Egypt, Tunisia, South Korea, and elsewhere. His work has appeared in various journals, magazines, and websites, as well as on radio and television. How are you doing, Ramin?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Hey, I found out about you from the Greenville Post, and you had a couple of incredibly insightful articles about the French elections. And you're just a brilliant satirist. And so I just wanted to have you on the show. Well, listen, the dust has settled. Your general thoughts and impressions of the French presidential election between Emmanuel Macron, who got 63%, and Marine Le Pen, who got 37%. I mean, that's not even close. And it just seems like the old dialectic, you know, the fat and happy bourgeois against the have-nots, and the former group is totally denying the dissatisfaction of the less privileged. Can you just kind of tell us your perspective there, sitting there in Paris?
Well, I think, you know, you wrapped it up there very, very well. I think something that we have to keep in mind is that this 65-35 final score is very, very misleading. First of all, Macron was in a, he was just a few points away from being eliminated in the first round. He led the first round with 24%, but there were four candidates that had at least 20%. So it was almost a four-way dead heat. And I can't recall, I haven't done the research, but I can't recall any time in the West where you've had, you know, a four-way dead heat, like that.
Yeah.
I think that really shows that really so many people, they favored so many different candidates. And then when we look at, you know, the 65-35 final score, we have to dig a bit deeper. So it's kind of simple math, but, you know, it's certainly – math always gets a bit confusing for some people, including me. 65%, all right, but they had 25% abstention, which is very high for France.
Add on
another 12% for people. 4 million voters got up, got dressed, walked out the door, went down to the voting booth, stood in line, got in the booth, and then purposely deposited a vote that they knew would not be counted, because 12% of the electorate made a blank or spoiled, i.e. damaged ballot. So we have 25% abstention, 12% of uncounted ballots. So Macron won 65%, not out of the entire electorate, but out of, you know, we have to take off 37% of the electorate. So he won 65% of 63% of the electorate, all right? But it gets even worse than that for him, because out of that 63% of all the voters, you know, who actually voted, 43% said they voted for Macron just to block Marine Le Pen. Okay? Out of that 63, you have to take out almost half. So the number of voters of the entire electorate who voted for Macron for his personalities or his policy is only 24%. 24%. And, you know, if you follow baseball and you hit 240, they don't make you president. They send you down to the minor leagues. One last thing. That 24%, that's exactly the score he got in the first round.
Exactly. So you're right.
Only less than a quarter of the voting population here is excited about this candidate, and I think that that speaks volumes.
Yeah. You know, it's terrible to see, you know, just the the every time they mentioned Macron in the press, he was automatically tagged as a centrist. And every time Le Pen's name was mentioned, she was tagged as a far right wing extremist, all this other, very, very negative language. And it was so pedantic and so methodical that it just came across as like a propaganda, driving a false narrative. I mean, how do you feel about that?
I think you're very right. I mean, Macron is, he was portrayed as this center-right, and Le Pen was portrayed as this right-wing. The reason for that is that the mainstream media, the establishment, they never consider the economic point of view. Both of these descriptions for these two candidates are based only on their cultural point of view. Because on the economic scale, Emmanuel Macron is a extreme right-wing person.
He's like a Reaganite. To the extreme,
How can you get more? How can you get further to the right than neoliberal austerity?
Yeah.
So, if you wanted to, you could very accurately describe Emmanuel Macron as a extreme right-wing candidate, but he wasn't. He was someone who. He's young. He's 39. He's from the younger generation. And, they say that each generation is getting less racist. He was someone who was not, pro-multiculturalism, pro-Muslim, pro-immigrant, pro-refugee, not at all. But he wasn't so bad as the National Front on these issues. But it's part of the plan to make people believe that there is no alternative to right-wing capitalism, that Marine Le Pen is described as someone who's on the far right.
She is a very left-wing economic. Her platform was like Mélenchon, who was endorsed by the communists.
It's very, very true. It's very, very true. People say that. Some people deny it, and they have a point, because if you listen to Marine Le Pen, like I have to for my job, she's kind of, it's only because I get paid to, it's tough. You've got to listen to people like that, for nothing. But, God bless the citizens who are totally committed. Her economic platform, it was left-wing socialism one day, and it was, right-wing fascist corporatocracy the other. It was kind of smoke and mirrors. So I'm not going to sit here and say that she's definitely, like Mélenchon, who's totally committed to, left-wing, and not far left, just left-wing, the former left of the 1970s, left-wing economic ideas. But there was definitely some left-wing aspects to her platform. And the most important thing to me is that she was the hope candidate. You would hope that maybe she wouldn't, that maybe she would follow through on some of these, left-wing economic protectionism, social welfare, safety, and that type of ideas. We weren't sure with her, but with Macron, we knew it's going, and now we know it's going to be 20% more austerity cuts than François Hollande. It's going to be more right-wing economics. And the IMF came out last year, and they admitted, after decades of ruining countries in Latin America and Africa and all over the world, they admitted that austerity does not work. But that's what we're looking at here in France.
Yeah.
Go
ahead. Go ahead, Romain.
I'm just saying, who's the extremist when, because Macron, the idea of neoliberalism, it's based purely on faith. It's not based on facts. It's a religion.
Yeah,
they have no proof that, neoliberalism works, but they still believe in it. To me, that makes you an extremist.
Yeah, it's like ideology or dogma.
Exactly. It's a dogma. It's not based on facts. Yeah.
Hey, listen, one thing that I kept thinking about as I was, and I'm going to go on record, I have two passports, an American one and a French one, and I feel much more French than American, and my wife is native French, and we both voted for Mélenchon the first round, and Le Pen the second round, just because we could just see that Macron was this Manchurian you know, presidential candidate, you know, right out of the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and NATO and you know, just a Washington puppet. And so we lost, but what I kept thinking about is that Macron and Hollande basically destroyed the Socialist Party, and then Macron started his own, you know, En Marche, same initials as his name, his party.
And I never noticed that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Megalomania. And then Mélenchon, who was, historically communist / workers party in that area, he got fed up with them and felt like they were selling out. And he started his own party, Unbowed France would be a good translation. And I kept thinking, why is Le Pen why does she keep hanging on to the National Front label? Because it's so stigmatized, you know, as being, you know, fascist and Nazi, you know, Nazified and racist and homophobic and misogynistic and everything else. Why does she hang on to it? I mean, is she going to do what Mélenchon did and Macron did and maybe start out with a new party?
That's a very good idea. I haven't heard that discussed, but certainly I would, if I was a party, if I was in the National Front Party, I'd really consider it. Yeah. Le Pen has said that there's going to be some major changes, but I think you're absolutely right. The National Front is associated with Vichy France, with the Algerian War of Independence, with decades of racism and xenophobia. You know, just like you said, it would be a very, very good idea for them to do a brand change because it's not a very good brand. You know, when almost half the electorate votes just against you, things aren't really working. I think that what's going to have to happen, and what you say is really a great idea and really worth a column or two. What's going to have to happen in 2022, the next round of elections, the only way that anti-austerity thought is going to be stopped is if there is some sort of unification between the National Front and between the voters who supported Jean-Luc Mélenchon. But just like you're saying, the National Front, their name is just so justifiably stigmatized. Mélenchon never will do that. I mean, I can't tell you how many left-wing voters I met who said, Ramin, I can't stand Macron, but my father would roll over in his grave if I ever voted for the National Front. Or my grandfather fought against the fascists. He would roll over in his grave if I ever voted for the National Front. So like you're saying, what they need to do is really make some changes and definitely get rid of that brand name. But there's one thing that really sort of surprised me in this election is that, there was only one presidential debate, which is really not enough for the voters to really scrutinize the candidate. Mm-hmm. What I saw is Marine Le Pen, she was not someone who was she did not even appear to be committed to her own ideas and her own principles. And I say that because she just kind of turned it into a laugh fest. And even when she made great points that were against austerity, she was more excited when she got laughs. And it really made me wonder, is this just another failed actor who's become a politician? Or does she really believe in what she's saying? Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure Marine Le Pen is the person to lead it. I think that many people, they just see Le Pen, and just like the National Front name, it's so tarnished. But the economic left is going to need these 10 million voters who supported her and the National Front if they're ever going to advance. I don't know what to do with it, to be honest with you, but that's a very good idea, what you said.
Well, you know what, my understanding is Mélenchon hates Le Pen and exactly. Diana Johnstone, I had her on a couple before the first round, and she said that the left and the unions have abandoned their their base. They've been co-opted, and all they're reduced, you know, is they've just been reduced to saying, you know, I'm on the left because I am against the fascist, you know, National Front, and that's become their defining definition of being on the left. As long as you say you're against fascist Le Pen and fascist National Front, then, you know, whether or not you sold out the workers or sold out ideals and dreams and visions and everything else, that's all that doesn't matter. All that matters is that you're against the fascist Le Pen. Do you agree with that?
Well, first of all, Diana Johnstone is absolutely superb, and she's right 9 times out of 10, perhaps more. But second of all, yeah, I would totally agree with you with this idea that it's just about fighting the National Front and also, fighting fascism and also fighting racism. It's these two things,
yeah.
Especially in this day and age of identity politics and much more enlightened views compared with, 60 years ago when they were throwing Algerians to drown in the Seine River in Paris. Things have really changed. But it's totally neutered of any economic aspect, the left here in France. And the unions, the unions literally signed off on almost every round of austerity measures that Hollande put forward. So the unions are not trusted, very much here. There's 5 main unions, and there's only 2 which are really give the impression of actually remembering what leftist economic, and they still signed off too. They fought for better, a better deal, but they were not able to or did not want to do the general strike like 1968, for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, to really, put the pain to the capitalists, to really get into their pocket and to really force some changes. I remember I was talking to the head of the largest union, and he is one of the 2 unions that's, kind of good, but not good enough. And I said, "What's going on? Where's the general strike?" He said, "Hey, man, I don't have a button I can push that says general strike, So it's not just the unions, but the unions are a big part of the problem. They really have been affected, and they're so very easily divided and conquered. They just buy off one set, one industrial branch, and another, and then everybody sort of loses faith, and they lose solidarity rather, and it just kind of all falls apart. And without solidarity, there's never going to be any sort of success in any sort of social revolution and in any sort of resistance to the capitalist oligarchy.
Yeah. One last question, Ramin. I know you're a busy guy, and we wanted to keep this one short. The email hack and all the fallout, just based on one article I read in English. I haven't checked the French press, but this guy, and it's from a credible source, and WikiLeaks says the data dump is authentic, saying that Macron is apparently buying designer drugs, cocaine, is a closeted homosexual, which really shouldn't matter, because I think doesn't Paris have a gay mayor?
Did
have a gay mayor. And Goldman Sachs, was paying, boatloads of money for big parties at the Élysée. I mean, that was just for starters. I mean, will all of this be censored in France? Will there be threats and lawsuits? And because it sure makes it look like Macron will be an easy mark for extortion and blackmail for like the Rothschilds and the CIA, et cetera. What do you think?
I'm not so sure. It was very hard to find out what was exactly in the Macron leaks. And first of all, I would say it was just sort of pathetic that the French media refused to comment on it, that they were intimidated by the state. The state said you cannot report on the contents until after the election. And I think that we have to remember that the U.S. has Fox News. And whatever anyone thinks about Fox News, they at least give they at least gave the side of Donald Trump. There was at least balance. In France, there was not one regional newspaper, one national newspaper, one national TV channel, which backed Le Pen. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, Macron won, because that advertising works. You know, they never even treated Le Pen's ideas with any sort of intellectual, you know, effort at all. It was just, oh, it's just unrealistic. It's unrealistic, which, you know, means there is no alternative to capitalism, to the European Union, to the Eurozone, to the status quo.
NATO.
As regarding what was in there, it was hard for me to find out because, one, I was so busy, and number two, it was only on Twitter that you could find stuff being posted. And the Macron, the pro-Macron people, they had decided to post pictures of cats to just jam up Twitter. And that was really annoying, and it was so stupid, and it worked. I saw some of the stuff that you were talking about. You know, what they are saying about cocaine is that there's an email saying, bring some C... for the boss. And that's not hard proof, but, you know, people are saying, oh, well, that's cocaine, and who's the boss? We don't know, and I'm not certainly slandering anyone here. I'm just telling you, you know, what's in the Macron leaks.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that I saw was that, and I think this will be talked about because it has to be, I saw hundreds of thousands of euros being paid to the top polling agencies here in France. And that's something that, you know, I mean, you can almost control the, you know, you can make a candidate inevitable just by presenting poll after poll
winning. That you're number one.
Yeah, I mean, people just say, oh, well, I'm not going to vote. Forget it. You know, it's all over. As far as him being gay, well, the guy is 39 years old and he has a 64-year-old wife. And I'm not one to dismiss true love. Maybe it's true love, but in the parlance of our times, they call that, you know, when a gay man marries an older younger woman, I'm sorry, a older woman, it's called a beer. I don't know. I don't care. All I can say is, as you know, what I've always said is I take the point of view of gay activists who say, if you're going to go after the gay vote and you are gay yourself, it's not fair for you to be in the closet. You know, you can't profit off the gay vote if you're gay yourself. But that's, you know, kind of a moot point, and it's not really very interesting to me beyond that.
Well, me neither.
Sure, I hear you. I mean, you know, it's 2017. Gay marriage here in France, you know, it's an amazing thing. Let me think if I can remember the exact date. I want to say December 5th, 2012 is the day that Hollande backtracked on austerity and introduced a austerity budget for 2013. And on that same day, he had the Socialist Party introduce the bill for gay marriage.
Yeah.
On the same day, you know, it's obvious that this whole gay thing is just one big distraction. And people get all, you know, hot under the collar over it. And, you know, many other people are like, well, we have much bigger fish to fry. You know, I'm certainly one of those people. But, you know, I don't think that that's – so, you know, with gay marriage, that's kind of a done deal now. I mean, a solid majority supports it. So, you know, France is a very, very, you know, open country in this type of a thing now. There is a very committed minority, many of whom supported Le Pen, that are against gay marriage. And now the fight is against gay adoption. I'm not really sure what's going on with that. But anyway, as far as him being blackmailed, well, I don't know. I think that at 39, you haven't done that much stuff. And I think that what I would say from WikiLeaks, even though, you know, I'm sorry, from Macron leaks, is that they probably didn't have a smoking gun, and that's why they didn't release it, because the hack was done right after round one, but they held on to it until 36 hours before the vote.
Yeah.
I think if they had a smoking gun, they would have found it. I didn't see any sort of smoking gun in the 36 hours, you know, that it was before the election. And I think that at 39, you know, it's like they say, you know, the spy agencies, if you can't get someone before 25, you know, to corrupt them, it's too late. And I think at 39, I don't think, for someone who's never even held elected office, I don't know how much dirt it's going to be, how much corruption. I mean, he's such a neophyte politically. So I think he's just kind of, You know, he's. I'll give you one little vignette from the debate. He was talking about austerity measures, and he turned to the two presenters, and he said emphatically, "That's what the bosses want." And he said it with an air like, "Well, we cannot contradict the bosses. That's what they want, and we can't possibly fight them." And I think that's his honest to goodness point of view. He's just going to do whatever the elite wants because there is no. And he doesn't believe in democracy. But he said he's going to rule by decree, just like Hollande did, if he has to. So he doesn't believe in democracy. He doesn't believe in sharing the wealth. He's young and ignorant and inexperienced. And, you know, he's going to be very, very easy to manipulate.
Yeah, to manipulate. Without
blackmailing, I think, you know.
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right about this identity politics. You know, it's the same thing. You know, you said, you know, they had hundreds of thousands of people out on the streets protesting gay marriage the day, you know, that he signed into law, you know, these draconian economic measures that, you know, that just ravage the working class. And they do the same thing every, you know, in the States, it's gun control, it's unisex bathrooms, you know, it's abortion, you know, it's
I remember, you know, because, you know, I have a vote in the States, you know, and I remember in 2004, in the middle of the Iraq war, it was gay marriage. That was the reason, you know, and then, you know, because I'm 39, to me, it was 1992 with Bill Clinton. The idea was to vote against Bill Clinton because he was going to put gays in the military. Remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe all this predates me, you know, but from what I know, since 92, this has been a canard that people get out and march, you know, against gays. But, you know, they're not going to get out there and march for their job or their wife's job or their kid's job. It's
well,
just crazy.
They're going to go out and march while they get their pockets emptied.
Exactly. You know, while their quality of life, their neighbor's quality of life is just gutted.
Yeah.
But whatever. Gays have different bathrooms or whatever it is, or gays can't go to the bathroom. I don't even know. I'm actually very proud to say that I have never read an article on the transgender bathroom thing. So I don't know.
Okay.
It's not a priority, but I'm glad, you know, other people are, you know, taking care of that so I can move my time and energies elsewhere. Any leftists would like. A lot of good fights to have that affect everybody.
Hey, well, listen, Ramin, this has been a great interview, and I loved having you on. We kept it short, and maybe let's check back in a couple, 3 months and just kind of see what's going on. And there, actually, the interview I did with Diana had a huge – I mean, my website's all about China and North Korea and the Philly, you know, Asia and – you know, American Empire and all and everything else, but her interview was really, really hotly listened to, and I'm sure yours will be too. So there is a lot of interest, general interest out there, you know, in Europe and France in particular. So maybe sometime this summer, let's get you back on and just kind of check in and see what's going on.
Anytime, you know, Diane does great work. You do great work. Happy to do it. Just one last thing, you know, one thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about is I think there was this great interest because the fate of the European Union hung in the balance. The EU could never survive without France, and they've gotten a stay of execution, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if she had have won, that would have been the end of the European Union as we know it.
All right, and it's not like they're going to change. We have Hollande Jr., and it's going to be more of the same. So I will be back here again talking about it probably in 5 years if somebody else doesn't leave before.
Hey, listen, Ramin, I'll let you get back to work, and great to talk to you. And I'll also put your articles that you wrote for the Greenville Post. In the article, introduce you, and if you have a link for Press TV, please give it to me, and I'll add that also.
Okay, and I'll also add the website, The Soccer, another great anti-imperialist website.
All right, yeah, I've done quite a few articles for the soccer too. So, hey, listen, have a great afternoon, and I'll probably have this up tomorrow within 24 hours.
Wonderful. Keep up the good work, Jeff.
Yeah, same to you, Ramin. Bye bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Bye.